Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Joanna Morales. Joanna is a cancer rights attorney and the CEO of Triage Cancer, a nonprofit organization that provides education on the practical and legal issues that impact individuals with cancer and their caregivers. Cancer is a huge issue amongst veterans, with complications coming out from Agent Orange with the Vietnam era burn pits and a number of other toxic exposures that we all have been exposed to throughout our time in the military. So she's here today to discuss the rights that veterans and service members have with regards to cancer and all that type of stuff. And so that way we can understand, especially with some of the new legislation that's come out, you know, what it is that we have available to us to help us in getting the care that we need. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Joanne. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I'm a cancer rights attorney by training, which means that I have spent the better part of my legal career teaching people how to navigate the systems that come up as a result of a cancer diagnosis. So a lot of people kind of look at me funny when I say I'm a cancer rights attorney. They don't really know what that means. Even most lawyers don't really know what that means. And the reason why is because it's actually covered lots of different areas of the law. So it's employment issues and accessing health insurance coverage and disability benefits or other types of government programs, estate planning and medical decision making, just general finances. So how do you manage your medical bills and what are the consumer protections that exist? So a lot of the things that we talk about as cancer-related legal issues are things that people don't think of as legal issues. You know, most people don't think of how do I buy health insurance as a legal issue, but there are laws and programs that exist to help people do that and to protect consumers. And our goal is to teach people what those laws say so that they can do the things they need to do to find their best path forward.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing, especially in the legal world where so many things change all the time. New laws are passed and new rights are created, or I don't want to say rights are created necessarily. That's probably not the best way to say it, but new opportunities exist for people to access certain resources, whether it's care through the VA or different insurance programs, things like that will come up. And you may do your research today and find out all that there is to know about all of the programs that are available today. But a month from now, new laws could be passed, new programs could be created, different things like that could happen. And all of a sudden, all of that knowledge is, I don't want to say it's outdated completely, but there's new stuff that you didn't even know about. And so, you know, I think it's important to have somebody like you on your side, especially if you're dealing with things, scary things like cancer, where you have other things to worry about than the legal aspects of everything that's going on. You got to get yourself healthy and everything, right? And so that's why I thought it was really important and timely, especially with some of the new laws that have passed recently. I think it's important to have someone like you on to let people know that there are things that they're probably just not even aware of that will help them should they receive a cancer diagnosis or want to plan for something, you know, in their future when they're going through this kind of thing. You know, it's really a difficult time that people are going through.
Absolutely. And our goal is really just to make sure people have the information that they need so they can make educated decisions and not lose out on some of the benefits and protections that they have access to.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the things that you mentioned earlier was picking like a health insurance plan. That was like one of the things that you are involved with. And again, you don't think of that as a legal issue. You know, I think, you know, a lot of us have health insurance and, you know, whether it's through the VA, it's through a third party, whatever it is, we have some sort of healthcare coverage. And I think it's interesting to learn more about how that insurance that you might have interacts with VA benefits, for example, that the veteran may have access to. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So in the cancer community, there's a lot of conversation around the financial burden of a cancer diagnosis. And I think that exists when we're talking really about any type of serious medical condition. And we think the number one way to solve that problem is by making sure people have adequate health insurance coverage. But most people don't know actually how to pick a health insurance plan to do that. It's one of those things that we say should be taught in high school because it's something everyone needs to do, but really no one ever teaches us how to do it. And so understanding really all of your health insurance options is the thing that we think is most important. And then comparing those options and figuring out which option is actually going to cost you less and help you actually get the care that you need. So when you have access to multiple options, like if you have access to VA care and then you have access to a private insurance option, for example, if you have an employer-sponsored health insurance coverage, what decisions you make in terms of how those interact or where you go to get your care can make a huge financial difference for you.
Sure.
VA healthcare, a lot of people assume it's free, but it's not free for everyone. It's means tested. So if you have a higher income level, you're going to be paying for certain types of care at the VA. So you want to make sure that if you do also have private insurance, that you're deciding and looking into what it's going to cost you to go to the VA for care versus private insurance. But sometimes the VA covers things that private insurance doesn't and vice versa. So understanding the care that you need and where to go to get that care is going to impact your finances.
Yeah, it certainly will. And there's a lot to consider there. There's a big web of information that has to get kind of weeded out to figure out what is the best for me, especially like you're saying, if you have third-party insurance through your employer and you also have VA benefits and things like that, then you have to figure out where am I going to be spending the most money? Where am I going to be getting the best care and kind of figuring out what the best option is for you? And I think a crucial thing, and you went back to saying this probably should be something taught in high school, but how do you figure out what is adequate healthcare coverage for yourself and your
family? So generally speaking, first, you want to make sure it's covering the providers that you're going to. So does it cover the hospital that you're going to or your primary care physician, or if you have a specific specialist you're going to go see? You want to make sure any plan that you're looking at actually covers those doctors and providers. Then you want to make sure if you're taking any prescription drugs that your plan is also covering those drugs. And the list of drugs covered by a particular plan is called a formulary. So you can actually ask the plan or any plan that you're looking at for their formulary. And then you can check to see if the drugs are on that list or not. But you also want to make sure that you're picking a plan that has the lowest out-of-pocket cost, especially if you do have a serious medical condition and you're actually utilizing your healthcare insurance. So the way that you do that is you take the monthly premium and you multiply it by 12 because that's how much it's going to cost you to have the plan for the year. And then when we're talking about private insurance, there's something called the out-of-pocket maximum. And that's the most that you're going to pay out-of-pocket for your medical care during the year. So we actually think it's the most important thing for people to find out about their own insurance is what that out-of-pocket maximum is, because at least you can kind of plan or at least know what the worst case scenario is. Because once you reach that out-of-pocket maximum in paying those co-payments and those deductibles out-of-pocket, then your insurance kicks in at 100% for the rest of the year. So once you reach that threshold, you kind of get some relief from having to pay any more out-of-pocket for the rest of the year. So picking a plan and understanding what the out-of-pocket maximum is key to the math. So once you do the math on the premium, so monthly premium times 12, then you add that to the out-of-pocket maximum. And that's really what you're going to pay for your health care and any out-of-pocket costs for the year. And oftentimes, plans with more coverage will have a higher monthly premium, but a lower out-of-pocket maximum. So sometimes those plans actually end up saving you thousands of dollars by the end of the year if you're actually using your healthcare coverage. So unfortunately, as a society, we kind of look at the monthly premium and we say, oh my gosh, it's a high monthly premium, but it could end up saving you whole lot of money by the end of the year.
And I think that's one of the things that is almost a gamble, because you don't always know if you're going to be using your full healthcare coverage for the year. I mean, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to use it at all because we'd just be healthy. Exactly. We wouldn't get into any accidents. Nothing bad would happen to us at all as far as our health goes. And it would just be there for the just in case scenario, and we wouldn't need it. But when those things happen unexpectedly, because no one's expecting to get hit by a bus or come, you know, get diagnosed with cancer or anything major like that, you should have adequate coverage to cover your family's financial situation, so that way you don't end up losing everything because of this one-off type of thing, right?
Exactly. And that's really, we've sort of forgotten the idea that insurance is insurance. It's just in case something were to happen. And unfortunately, the people who I talk to every day have had something happen. And so even if they didn't have adequate insurance when they were first diagnosed with cancer, you can still make changes now because of certain consumer protections that you couldn't used to. So you now every single year can look at your health insurance coverage and make sure it's still meeting your needs.
Sure.
So if you did have really high out-of-pocket costs this year, you could actually make some changes to your coverage so that next year you're not facing those huge out-of-pocket costs again.
Right, exactly. And I know from my own family's personal experiences, we've had some very unexpected things pop up. And when those things happened, it was a huge relief when we looked at the bill that was coming from the hospital, like what it would have cost us, like how many hundreds of thousands of dollars that would have cost us. It would have ruined us financially, but we had the coverage that was there that took care of that and really saved us. I mean, we'd still be paying it off for years and years to come. It just would not be something that we could cover ourselves. So, you know, we were very fortunate in that case that we had some sort of coverage that took care of that type of situation. So I know, especially a lot of times younger people in their 20s are just starting out and they're like, they're invincible. Nothing's bad is going to happen to them, right? But until it does. And then when it does, then you're going to wish that you had something available there, you know, to help you out financially, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that was your family's experience. Unfortunately, there are too many people who don't have the adequate health insurance coverage, right, and end up having to file bankruptcy because they can't pay their bills and they end up losing their home, or, you know, they're worried about their job and losing access to their health insurance. So we really, our goal in providing education on all these topics is to prevent some of those crises. And, you know, as I shared, a lot of what we end up teaching people, we talk about through the lens of a cancer diagnosis, but it really is just stuff that applies to everyone. So, you know, how to pick a health insurance plan and understand your rights at work and estate planning and making sure, you know, you planned ahead for your family, or
sure,
managing your finances or understanding your credit score. Those are all just all those things that we really should be taught in high school.
Right. And you don't think of those things as legal issues, but you can see how they can quickly become legal issues if they're not addressed appropriately in the beginning, right? You're talking about filing for bankruptcy and things like that. Those become legal issues when you no longer have the ability to pay for, you know, whatever the services were that you needed. Let's switch gears a little bit here. And there's been a lot of talk recently about legislation and things like that regarding burn pits and stuff. And recently the PACT Act passed and was signed into law. Could you talk about some of the benefits that are available now to veterans that maybe weren't available prior to this being signed into law, and how that impacts veterans?
Yeah. So the PACT Act is a new law that expands healthcare and disability benefits for veterans who are exposed to burn pits and other toxic substances while serving in the military. But a lot of the news was really around some of the new benefits available for individuals who served in the Gulf War and in post 9/11 situations who were exposed to burn pits or sort of other kind of unknown toxic exposures. And really why that's so significant is that it sort of eliminated all the work that veterans have to go through to prove that their medical conditions were tied to those exposures. And that was really a pretty big deal because it eliminated that barrier to getting access to benefits and just presumes that anyone who served and those conflicts actually can get access to the benefits. But it also snuck in some other older issues that veterans were experiencing. So it added some presumptive eligibility related to Agent Orange exposure. In the Vietnam War, there was some radiation exposure. There was some base cleanup that had radiation exposure. So it added some additional categories of individuals where they allowed for presumptive eligibility for healthcare and disability benefits for veterans. And so if you want that information, it's very clearly laid out on the VA website, but we also did a blog on it on triagecancer.org/blog that kind of breaks down the key eligibility requirements for each of those groups, and then it connects to the benefits that someone might be eligible for.
Great. Yeah. And I know there's, from my own experience, there's definitely situations where people were exposed to things like burn pits. On the base that I was stationed on in Afghanistan, we had a pretty large burn pit. We had it situated up on top of a mountain that was kind of surrounding the base that we were on. But we would burn everything, plastic water bottles. We'd burn electronics like computers and batteries and old uniforms. And just we'd burn everything in there. And I'm certain that there were some toxic chemicals that were released in there. And, you know, we had to pass by that burn pit to go to some of the points that we had around the base for base security purposes. We had to go by that. We were breathing that in all night long. You know, the wind would blow sometimes and blow all the smoke down to where the barracks were and everything. We were definitely exposed to that. And we also were exposed to radiation as well. There was a building near the Pakistani border in Afghanistan where it was like an X-ray building where trucks would drive in and they'd be able to scan the trucks to look for weapons and things of that nature in there. And some of the local Afghans who were working in this building, they were being diagnosed with cancer and at an alarmingly high rate, and they couldn't figure out why. So we brought in, and I forget the name of the reader, but the thing that basically detects radiation levels. And it was probably about 20 yards or so away from the building that you had to be in order to be at a safe level from the radiation. And I frequently would walk into that building to go, you know, check out things, and I'd be in there. Other people that I served with were in there. And, you know, it's amazing 12 years later that I still haven't come down with anything, you know, like that. But it's nice to know that some of these conditions are just assumed now that, yes, this was because of your experience over there. You don't have to jump through hoops anymore to try to prove to the VA that, yes, this is definitely because of, you know, the exposures that I had. And I think that's something that is important that maybe people don't quite understand. Maybe people haven't applied for any VA benefits or anything like that before, and they don't realize it's not just an automatic. You have XYZ condition and you boom, now all of a sudden you get the VA benefits. You kind of have to, you have to prove that it was connected to your service, right? Could you talk a little bit about how that works?
So it's actually really hard to prove that your medical condition is connected to a specific cause, especially when we're talking about cancer, when there are so many reasons why someone, and sometimes no reason, why someone might actually develop cancer. And so that causation is actually often really hard to prove and a barrier to getting access to benefits, which is why this law was actually such a big deal. Is that people don't have to go through those hoops to show, medically speaking, that you were exposed at X on X day to X thing, and therefore it caused your cancer or your respiratory illness. And so this is why it just makes it easier for people to get access to benefits. And I think the other piece is if someone had tried to get access to benefits and were previously denied because they couldn't prove it, this is a moment where you can actually reapply for benefits and get access to those benefits.
Yeah. So that was going to be my next question, actually, because I know there are people who have applied for benefits, and this may have been a couple of years ago, and they got denied. And now all of a sudden this has passed. And I think that's sort of what I was getting at before, is you could have done all the research in the world months or years ago, and that research may not apply right now because there's something new. And we now have the PACT Act that now allows you to go back and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, reapply for this or appeal the decision that was made back that far, however far back that it happened to be. When you apply for benefits, and this is just from my experience and for the listeners who may not be familiar with this, but when you apply for benefits, the benefits will start, if you're approved for those benefits, they'll start on the day that you applied for those benefits. Correct?
So this law, if I recall off the top of my head, it was supposed to go into effect 90 days from the enactment.
Okay.
But it's still, so my message to everybody is, if you think that you qualify for these benefits or you were previously denied and need to reapply, contact the VA immediately. And you can file a claim online. You can do it over the phone. You can do it in person at a VA location. And there are a lot of resources online on the VA website on how to actually file the claim and what you need to include. So I don't want to discourage anyone from getting access to the benefits right away, especially retroactively, given if someone applied before and was denied.
Yeah. And that I think is the point I was trying to get at, is the retroactive aspect of this, because if someone applied, let's say 2 years ago for certain benefits and they were denied, and now they come back and they appeal that decision, they, as far as I understand, they should be, assuming it gets approved, they should be owed that back pay for those last 2 years. So if it, let's say it's $1,000 a month, just for easy numbers, I know it doesn't exactly ever work out to that, but you know, you're looking at $24,000 that would be paid kind of lump sum to you for that type of thing, as long as I'm understanding that correctly.
That is my understanding of the law. I think the piece about laws is they pass the law and then an agency actually has to implement that law. And when in that process, an agency releases regulations and the details about how that's actually going to happen. So I haven't heard about any details of where someone hasn't gotten access to past benefits at this point, but theoretically, that's the way that it's supposed to work.
Right.
They do call that claim a supplemental claim if someone has been denied previously, but now has a medical condition that is now considered presumptive, then they just file that supplemental claim.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And so that makes sense. So certainly if you have been denied in the past, for the listeners, if you've been denied your benefits because you weren't able to prove that it was service connected or whatever, definitely go back, appeal that decision. You could be looking at a significant amount of money that would be coming your way for that. And I know money is not going to fix everything, right? Money doesn't necessarily, isn't going to take the cancer away. It's not going to, you know, resolve that respiratory illness or whatever else it is that you may be dealing with. It's going to make things a little bit easier for you, you know, for your family, for yourself. It'll make things certainly easier as far as that goes. And I know there's been other issues on various military bases around the country, around the world, really. There's a bill in Congress, I believe, regarding harmful water on Camp Lejeune. There's an issue in Hawaii, I think, Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Hickam, that had another water issue. Other bases have had similar issues with their water and mold and other things like that. What legal recourse do the service members have for dealing with all of that type of stuff?
So it does depend on the issue. So with Camp Lejeune, they actually have a law that also just passed recently that provides some presumptive eligibility and adds some medical conditions. So if you were diagnosed with one of those presumptive medical conditions and you served at that base, or it affected your dependents who are living on base, then you get access to healthcare and disability benefits through those presumptive conditions. So that also made things a little bit easier, because now you don't have to hire a lawyer to actually file a lawsuit. You can actually just apply for the benefits online through the VA now. With Hawaii, I think that's an ongoing issue. So I think that's something that people do need to think about, what they might have been exposed to. I think we'll probably learn more as that unfolds. My understanding is they're still trying to remedy the water situation there. But if someone has questions about really any of this, I think going to the VA to pose some initial questions about what you have access to. And then if you need more information or need help navigating the system, there are veterans legal resource programs out there. The American Bar Association, which is aba.gov, has a veterans resource page for legal resources. But certainly you can contact us at triagecancer.org and we can point you towards resources based on the issues or questions that you have.
Yeah, that's great that there are people out there like yourself and there's resources available for people to, you know, get in touch. But, you know, I can only imagine, fortunately, I haven't had to deal with this, but I can only imagine having to live in these substandard conditions where the water is undrinkable, there's mold and other toxic exposures really that are going on. And not only would it be bad enough that it's just, you know, me as a service member or, you know, somebody else as a service member, but when your family has to live in those conditions as well, like that just to me just doesn't seem right. Is there anything that people can do to help expedite the process of remedying the situation that they're living in as opposed to just waiting for, yeah, okay, yeah, now we have this exposure to this, now we get XYZ benefits or whatever? That seems like a reaction kind of thing as opposed to being proactive.
I think the first piece is most of us don't know what we're being exposed to. And I think that isn't a situation that's just limited to military bases. But I think that elected officials are an untapped resource with respect to these types of issues, especially when it's around access to veterans benefits or someone who's currently serving in the military because they're responsible. So our elected officials are the ones who are making decisions about these laws. They have the power to ask questions of federal agencies about what's going on in their districts. So if you are serving on a military base where you think that there is an issue, communicating with the elected official who's responsible for where that military base is actually step number one. I think that also that applies when you're having trouble getting access to benefits. There are actually staff members of Congress who are responsible for constituent services. So if you're having trouble getting access to VA benefits, then communicating with their office and the staff person who's responsible for constituent services can actually speed up resolution. So I think we sometimes forget that that is what they're there for,
right?
And that we don't kind of tap into those resources.
Yeah. And I had an issue. It wasn't a medical or anything like that issue, but I had an issue where some of my paperwork was incorrect and needed to be amended and corrected, basically. And so I filed all the paperwork with the right agency, the right organizations, all the T's were crossed, all the I's were dotted, everything was in the right place. It took over 2 years and I still hadn't heard a response from them as far as the status of this. And I tried following up, I got nothing. It was just crickets. So I ended up writing a letter to one of the elected officials in this area. And within a month, paperwork was corrected, everything was sent back, everything was done. And so it was a much faster process once I did that. But you're absolutely right that that's what they're there for. They're there to represent you in the government organizations that you are trying to navigate. And, you know, if you can't rely on the people who you are electing to represent you, then you probably should elect some other people.
Exactly. I mean, they work for us, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's everything that the federal government handles. So everything from, you know, getting your passport expedited to an issue with the IRS. So
yeah.
I think that we definitely don't use those resources as much as we could.
Yeah, for sure. And this is definitely not a political thing. It's not a Democrat or Republican independent thing. It doesn't matter who that person is. That's their job. They're there to represent you, regardless of the little initial letter after their name. It doesn't matter. That's their job. And so when you elect these people, whether you voted for them or not, it doesn't matter. They're there to serve you. And I think we That's a refreshing reminder. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And I think so it's important to know those constituent services individuals are usually at the local level. So you want to go to their local office as opposed to their DC office, and their staff are there to help people locally.
Yeah. And you can usually find the local office. You can usually find them on the website for your congressperson or the senator, whoever it is that you're dealing with. You can usually find where the local office is and hours and phone numbers and address, things like that. You can find all of that stuff usually on their website. So, you know, first off, identify who the person is, because it may not necessarily be your congressperson that you're dealing with. It may be like if you're stationed at a base someplace else.
Exactly.
You know, you may be away from your hometown, you may be someplace else. So figuring out who that congressperson is who's responsible for that area that you're dealing with, and then figure out where their office is and who the right people are to talk to, make an appointment there and get in touch with them. But that's, I think that's one of the best takeaways, I think, out of all of this, is that there are people there who are not being utilized. And a lot of times we sit here, you know, moaning and complaining about how no one is doing anything for us. And there's literally people sitting there waiting to help you, and we don't utilize those services. So definitely reach out to those people and try to get the assistance that you need. And they'll move things along, from my experience anyway. So they'll definitely move things along a little bit quicker than you might be able to do on your own. So, wow. I think we've covered a lot of stuff here. I'm sure we've just scratched the surface with regards to all of the benefits that are available and things like that. But I think the actionable insights in this episode is that, you know, there are things constantly evolving. So check with the VA, see what benefits are available to you now that may not have been available to you 6 months ago or a year ago or whatever time period it was that you maybe last applied for certain benefits. Keep up on that. Just because you've been denied certain benefits doesn't mean that's the end of the story. You may still have access to some of those benefits now that certain things have changed and will continue to change in the future. There may be other laws that get passed that allow you to have access to things that maybe you were denied in the past. You know, utilize those elected officials. They are there to help you, to represent you in cases like this. And so use those resources, and, you know, make sure you, one of the biggest things I think is making sure that you have the adequate health coverage, because that could totally ruin your family if you don't have the right coverage should something unexpected happen. So really awesome episode here. I think a lot of actionable advice. Where can people go to find out more about what it is that you do and get assistance for things that maybe we didn't cover, but still may fall under that umbrella of those legal resources that you might provide?
Sure. So you can visit our website at triagecancer.org, and we have free educational events to provide information about these topics and so many more. And we have materials on our website, but we also have a legal and financial navigation program that's also free. And so people can get one-on-one assistance for getting their questions answered as well.
And like any other nonprofit, I'm sure fundraising is an issue that you are always looking for help with, or volunteers or things like that. If people want to help out, where can people go to help out, whether it's through volunteering their time or finances or whatever it is that you may be looking for?
We definitely are funded entirely through grants and sponsorships and donations. So if you are interested in making a donation, you can do that at triagecancer.org and find out about volunteer opportunities and the other ways we engage with the community.
Excellent. So definitely go check out triagecancer.org if you're interested in helping out, supporting this cause, this mission that they have. And if you are in need of financial resources or legal resources, definitely check out triagecancer.org. Lots of free resources available there, and they can point you in the right direction if maybe they're not the right person or group of people to help out in your particular situation. I'm sure they have plenty of resources available that they can point you in that right direction. So thank you again, Joanna. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and share all of these resources with us. I think this is a really impactful, powerful episode, and hopefully it will help out a lot of people.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.